I'm Lynn Hadley, your host of Talking Story, and I'm here today with Chef Michael Lalowitz. He grew up in Detroit with influences of Polish, German, Jewish, Greek, and Italian food, all about, and including a job at the Authentic Square Pan Pizzeria. Chef Michael has been taking in culinary experiences through the tastes, sense around him since his youth. Formerly, he was educated at the Western Culinary Institute in Portland, and experientially from family and travel across U.S. and Europe. He and his partner in life and business, Nancy Gorshi, have been successfully running their award-winning restaurant, The Depot, in Seaview since 2003. Welcome to Talking Story.
Well, thanks for having me.
I appreciate you coming over the river to speak with us today. Let's talk about those tastes and scents that initiated your culinary journey. At youth, with home and family?
Oh, yeah, I think my influences started with my mother. She was a fantastic cook and a great baker. I got a little tired of eating the same thing all the time, and the first job I ever had was in the pizzeria on the corner that was run by a wonderful guy who was like a second father to me. And that's where I learned how to chop things and make things. And there's not a lot of creativity there, but a work ethic was installed up there.
And that was a very diverse neighborhood, it sounds like, yeah. With a Greek, Italian, Polish, Jewish,
yeah, it was,
all sorts of influences.
Our neighborhood was like a suburb outside Detroit, and my parents grew up in an enclave down in Detroit called Hamtramck, which is a total Polish community. And as soon as they made a little bit more money, they moved out to the suburbs. And this little community, Oak Park, Michigan, where I grew up, was also known as Little Israel. And the local community got together and wanted more diversity in their city, and actually loaned the Catholic Church money to buy their building and establish some more diversity in the neighborhood, because it was all Jewish only. And that's when we moved in, and I was born there, actually. My sisters are quite older than I am, and so really interesting neighborhood. So I still remember. I'm not that old, but we had fruit vendors that used to come around with a cart, and milkmen. And people, you don't see that much anymore.
So when did you realize that this was kind of your thing, that your craft?
Boy, I tell you, I didn't really realize it till later in life, because I'd done anything I could do to get out of Detroit. It was not somewhere I wanted to stay. I knew I didn't really belong there. And so I traveled a little bit, and with my parents and my sister, but my sister had moved to Washington, D.C. Early on in my life. Probably she left when I was probably about 14 or something like that. And so when I wanted to get out of Detroit, the first place I went was Washington, D.C., and that's where my real journey began. And I had an array of jobs and all kinds of different spectrums of labor, and it wasn't until I met my wife and we moved to Oregon when I realized I was missing something meaningful in my life. So I went out and went back to school. We had been traveling a lot by then to Europe, around the United States, and just really found my path probably when I was in my 30s.
So were the European travel or trips kind of influential in developing that culinary side of things as well?
Yeah, I got out and really saw the world. I think travel broadens your mind and opens your mind to so many different things, seeing different cultures and different foods and architecture. It's really, I think that's really what opened my mind, because we not only did we travel to Europe, Italy, France, Greece, Germany, we traveled around the United States a lot because she was a lobbyist in healthcare, and she would always be on a sabbatical or something going on. And back in those days, when you had air mileage, you know, it was easy to hop on a plane, go somewhere, go to New Orleans for the weekend, go to San Francisco for the weekend, come back. And, you know, we're also on an expense account, so we're eating at the nicest places in town. And I'd always had this ability to eat a dish and go and make it. I've never had to look at a recipe in my life. I didn't know that that was something.
Wow, it's like the culinary equivalent to playing by ear, huh?
Yeah.
Cooking by tongue.
Yeah, yeah. And we were really into wine back then too. So we were studying that really well, and you know, broadening our horizons with that.
So that undoubtedly allowed you to expand your cooking styles and regional influences.
Absolutely, yeah.
Is the professional kitchen community very connected and sharing as far as like chef to chef, or is it sort of proprietary as far as that goes?
Well, we don't have the ability to get together too often. We, for 11 or 12 years, the Baked Alaska sponsored this fundraiser for March of Dimes, and then it became for the Woodman Shelter, and we all met up there. There would be like 12 or 15 chefs from all local restaurants, and then after that event we would get together and talk, and there isn't anything like that anymore, and it's too bad, because we all got to know each other and who we are, and we all respected each other's hard work. And so there isn't really anything like that anymore. That some of the chefs that are on the peninsula now, I kind of know them. I mean, we end up seeing each other maybe around, you know, in the winter when it's slower out and people aren't working as much, as many hours.
Well, I know you're very generous with sharing your recipes, and I've seen some YouTube videos along with seafood preparation, and enjoyed some specialty dishes like your Dungeness mac and cheese, which is very, very popular.
Oh, yes. Thank
and,
you.
And made when ordered clam chowder.
Oh, yeah.
Did you come up with that yourself?
Yeah. I always have this rule for myself. Never do anything that everybody else does. And if you do, do it completely different. So it's kind of a misnomer a little bit, because we make the chowder. And what the point on that recipe was, what we're trying to get across is that when you order it, we heat it up and we put fresh clams in it from the Willapa Bay. So it's not sitting in a warmer like you get in so many places. That's the only way they can do it. I thought, you know, you really, really do it differently and heat it up to order. So, because we have had some people come in and want me to change the recipe, and it's already made. So we don't, you know, make it exactly to order, but we want to make sure that you get fresh clams in there, and they open up, you know, the wonderful juice comes out of them from the, and they're a little bit salty. So we actually don't make the chowder that salty, because it's going to be very, very salty if you have fresh clams and they're salty already naturally.
I have to confess, because I read an article about you that listed the ingredients in the recipe I made.
Yeah.
The Dungeness mac and cheese. I'm sure it was delicious. I'm sure yours would beat mine hands down.
It's a stovetop type thing that we do, so it's made to order. But I love making that recipe at home or for functions, and we bake it and it comes out different, but it's just as good. And some people like the crispy on the bottom when you don't get that if you're doing a stovetop type.
Does it take a while to finesse a recipe, or do you put it together from experience and kind of what the ingredients demand?
Oh, I think it's like writing a song. I mean, sometimes they just come to you, they come right out of you, and other times you have to keep poking away at it for a while to get it to be right.
Do you like the the day-to-day demand of coming up with the specials, or is it kind of keeping it fresh, literally, you know, the fresh ingredients and what you have to work with on your palate that day that kind of excites you in the kitchen?
Yeah, I usually put more of my creativity towards my special menus that we do, like we do 9 wine dinners a year. They're always on a Friday, first Friday of the month. We do them in the winter time when it's slower, and we either pair a vintner or a distributor who wants to bring in a winemaker. So we have a lot of people from Walla Walla that have houses on the peninsula, a lot of winemakers. So we'll pair with them. I've got the upcoming Wild Mushroom Dinner. It's our 16th annual Wild Mushroom Dinner coming up. That's usually sold out. So those will all be so 4 courses, 5 wines, 1 price, no substitutions. It starts at 7:30 and there's just 1 seating. And we usually have the winemaker come. This year we have a man from Italy coming to speak, a vintner, and that's where I get more of my creativity out. On a day-to-day basis, restaurants need to be consistent, so I don't change things too much on a daily basis, because people come to expect a certain thing, and you have to make sure that that's done correctly and in a timely manner. So I usually put all my creativity after the menu set for the half a year, because I only change it once a year. We do have a winter menu and a summer menu, and there's not too many things we take off anymore because people just have these favorites, and I want to give them what they want. That's one thing you learn in the restaurant business: give the people what they want.
That works in many walks of life. Well, you mentioned the regional specialty dinners, and mushrooms. Is that what drew you to the Pacific Northwest? There's some just really wonderful things to work with out here.
Oh, I think I got off the plane in Portland for the first time, and I said, I'm never going back. The blue sky was an August day. It was a blue sky, and you could breathe the air, and there's plants and trees and animals all around me. And I said, this is where I belong. This is what I've been looking for. Because I used to hang out in northern Michigan a lot when I was growing up, and I really loved it up there. And I'm kind of an odd person, because I am a very city boy, but I love the woods. So I'm kind of odd. I like both.
Well, I'd just like to remind everybody you're tuned to Coast Community Radio. This is Talking Story with your host, Lynn Hadley. And today we are speaking with Chef Michael Lailowitz from Seaview, Washington, and the very popular Depot Restaurant. The Pacific Northwest offers so many delicacies that are quite subtle. How do you like to approach these?
Oh, like anything, you want to always enhance the flavor of something and not cover it up. So I'm always kind of thoughtful when I create a recipe or something that isn't going to stomp on the flavor of something. Like, you know, you don't want to cover up the taste of clams or the real subtle taste of crab, which is why I made that recipe. You taste the garlic and you taste the cheeses, but you also taste the crab in that recipe. So.
And seafood, is there I know you had some, it seems like the simpler the better. I mean, not to give away too much, but.
Absolutely. Yeah, the oyster escargot that we have on the menu, it's just a garlic lime butter that we put on those, which is, and the reason I do that is because the first chef I ever knew when I was growing up, we had a wonderful place to get oysters. And so we would always squeeze fresh lime on them instead of lemon like everybody else does. I think that's because that's all he had in the house. But ever since then, I've always liked lime on oysters. And so that's why we did that dish. And it, like you say, it doesn't stomp on the flavors. So it helps them.
So it's fun the way we pick up these. Our craft is seasoned by the things we pick up as we roll along.
Absolutely.
And you and Nancy have been running a restaurant now for close to 17 years?
Yeah, 16 going on 17.
That's a great run, still going strong, and no easy feat.
No.
What do you attribute your success to?
Those old adages reign true. Never treat anybody the way... Well, how do you say it? Always treat people the way you'd like to be treated.
Yes.
Yeah. And I want to have an environment that's fun, that people enjoy coming to work. I never would want to have somebody think, I have to go to work today. You know, that's not what I was like. Oh, I get to go to work today. That's more of a positive spin and something I'd like to. Also, we've had a very good luck with our employees. They're like family to us. And a lot of them have been there since day one. Don Porter, our head waitstaff and manager, he's been there from day one. And Ashley Wassmere, been there since day one. She, my sous chef that I have currently, out of the 16 years that we've been in business, he's been with us 14. And my line, we call him a chef de partie in French, and it fits him. But and he's been with us 11 years, and a lot of the other wait staff. I think we have 18 employees altogether. We have a couple dishwashers, and one of them's been with us 15 years. I want to say
that's kind of unheard of,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's makes a family, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's lots of hard work. How do you keep up the energy and the drive to do that?
I have no idea. It's just I had one shot at it after I'd done working for everybody else on the planet, and I had one shot at it, and I wasn't going to blow it. That's the way I felt.
Yeah. Does it drive you crazy that people always romanticize, oh, I'd love to have a restaurant? It's like, you have no idea.
No, I don't. I just snicker to myself, and people will say, oh, my friends say I can cook really well, and I should open up a restaurant. I said, don't do it. If you like to cook and you want to keep liking it, just do it at home. Keep it your hobby. Because when your hobby becomes your passion and your business, it's different. You know, you still like it, but it's tough.
Definitely. Oh, what compels you to create new dishes and try new flavors?
Oh, you know, talking to people like you who like to eat and like food, and that's inspirational, you know. Or just walking into a supermarket, just seeing fresh produce, somebody brings you something. It sets your mind. Everything sets my mind going down a culinary road. I'm always thinking about food.
And yet you're not a portly fellow.
Oh, thanks. I was. When I opened up the restaurant, I weighed about 295 pounds, and just couldn't maintain that. Just came off when it had to.
Well. Also, I understand that there's sort of a performance table. You can reserve the chef's table and actually see you in action.
Well, yeah, it's a small restaurant, and I have an open kitchen, so you can see us from anywhere in the restaurant. We do have a chef's table, and I have a variety of cheeses that I usually will pick one, and I'll just stick with that for the month. And I just give customers that and welcome them. And it's really just a viewing flat platform. As in, because like some chefs have actually the time to create special dishes, and maybe they have a huge restaurant, and they have a table in the back, and they'll do tasting menus. And we're very small, and there's just two of us cooking, and we don't have the ability to do that. It would be wonderful if I did, but it's more of a viewing platform, and I just wanted to be stuck back in the back of the house in a kitchen for 20 years. I've known a lot of chefs that done that, and it wasn't healthy.
Well, and it's probably nice for them to see the actual preparation, yeah, and for you to see the people enjoying it.
Absolutely, yeah, and people do like it.
And it's a bit of a dinner show, so
yeah,
to speak.
I always say dinner and a show. Good or bad.
Do you appreciate that kind of almost performance or showmanship aspect of it?
Yeah, there was a lot of restaurants I went to early on. In Portland had I forget the name of the place now. There's one in Seattle, and then they came to Portland for a while, and it was basically a show kitchen. They trained all the chefs to like throw pasta into another pan, and the name eludes me right now, but it's still there in Seattle. And every time I would go into a restaurant, you're always trying to see what was going on in the back. It's just interesting. And I think it makes a place be alive instead of being kind of stuffy. And we're definitely not stuffy.
Well, on that note, you started some other restaurants in Portland, didn't you?
Yeah, I worked my way around Portland in a very short period of time, like a 10-year period. One of the things that I did was I opened up a jazz club with Jimmy Mack and his wife Stephanie, and their whole family was involved in that, and I got to meet most of them, and just a terrific bunch of people. And it's a great loss to the city of Portland. Jimmy died, so and to his family, of course. But yeah, it was a big loss, but he leaves a big gap in that city.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was primarily Greek cuisine?
Pretty much. But there later on, other people came in, and they just did good kind of standard fare. You know, they had steaks. So anything you want in a jazz club, you know, it was appropriate. Whenever they had crab cakes or a nice steak or something like that, they always had good food after I left.
Well, I'm asking for personal reasons, yeah, because I'm always looking for a good recipe for melanzano salata.
Oh.
my personal eggplant salad favorite.
Oh, I got a good moussaka recipe.
Oh, okay. I'm sure
and hummus.
I would love to get that too.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
We make all our own salad dressings at the restaurant.
Oh, wonderful.
And the one that's been on the menu, the house salad, is just greens with a red wine vinegar vinaigrette, blue cheese crumbles, pear, and candied walnuts. I actually invented that at Jimmy Mack's, and that is a marinade that we used to use for chicken, for souvlaki. So that's where that came from.
That sounds great. And another one of your, aside from the upcoming wild mushroom dinner, you have a wild game dinner?
Yeah, the next one, the following month, will be the wild game dinner, which I haven't finished writing the menu for yet, which I'm lagging behind on.
Oh, okay. there's time for that, although it feels like there's never enough time for anything. I don't claim to be a chef of any kind, but I've never ever understood how to work with wild game. Is that how were you able to master that?
Trial and error. Yeah, and a lot of reading. I read a lot of books. I've always been a voracious reader on cookbooks, and not so much anymore because I'm just too busy doing it. I'm in it, but there was a period, you know, 20 years, 30 years, every single book that came out, anything I could find, I used to get lost in Powell's, you know.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, right? And I was in culinary school, and I got an assignment from one of the chefs told me to go find out the origins of the word garmanger, which means everything in its place. You know, it's like a culinary term in France. And I went down this rabbit hole, and I never came out of it. And I discovered all these books, and I discovered what a thesaurus was. And, of course, nowadays you could just Google everything. You don't have to put any time into anything, looking anything up. But that took me down on an amazing journey of learning. It's probably where I got the recipes for the game from, old Escoffier books.
Oh.
Yeah. And then once you start, if you follow a recipe and you then can be creative after you made it once.
So that was truly your wild rabbit hole.
Yeah. Really. Absolutely.
Is there anything else you'd like to talk about today, or tell us your secret kitchen information that you want to share? Or
no. We have like 18 employees. The depot restaurant was a train depot in 1888, and it was a platform first, and then they built the building. When I came in, it had been a tavern for on and off for 60 years. No one's ever had a restaurant in there before. I bought it from a couple who was running a little bistro in there, and they had found it had been vacant for 5 years. And when I got it from them, it was in terrible shape. And we rebuilt the whole thing and put the walk-ins in and hood fans and the walls and the floors and the electrics and everything. And because something has been in a neighborhood for a really long time, some people think that it's just always been there. But anybody who has a house on the coast knows things don't last. So it took some doing to get it to where it is, and it takes a lot of doing to keep it up and running, just the building itself, just from the weather.
Yeah, you were saying you spend on average 16 hours a day there.
Yeah, and I don't work every day anymore. When the first 3 years I was there, 16 hours a day, 6 days a week. And I'm not doing that anymore. I'd be dead.
We don't want that to happen.
But no, in the summertime, I'm there quite a long hours, but not as many days.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming over the river to talk to us today. It's been a real treat to have you here, Chef Michael.
Well, thank you.
And thanks for tuning in, Talking Story.
Wonderful. I look forward to seeing you again.
A new world.